Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to do something we haven't done in a while, which is talk video games. But first, I want to spring something on you.
Okay.
Because I went to the movies yesterday. I had not planned on going to the movies. We even talked the last time we recorded. It was like, yeah, nothing's really coming out this week. So I'm probably, like, you weren't planning on seeing anything. I wasn't. But then... I don't remember why, but I opened Fandango and I clicked on like to see what was showing in the area, and the 4:30 movie, Kevin Smith's latest film, was actually playing in Chattanooga.
Okay.
So it's like from what I've seen, it's wide release, but like not huge. Like, it's playing everywhere, but everywhere isn't really everywhere, you know?
Yeah, it's a very, it's a wide limited release. So, like, in my area, I have it in two theaters, but each of the theaters are only showing it twice in the day.
Yep. There was
and one of them is 4:30. One of them is at 4:30. Like, at least they understand the concept of this, right? The 4:30 movie at 4:30.
There was one showing in my area.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
So, so yeah, I got to go see a Kevin Smith film in theaters. I was going to say it's the first time that's happened in a while, but I did see Clerks 3 when it played.
I remember we had actually had a full conversation about it when it was released. And Kevin Smith himself. So, I mean, you guys all know that we're both on file as being fans of Smith, and this one. Okay, so overall thoughts, like, because I'm very curious about this one. This one seems like it's really, 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 like, we've talked about how, like, Smith has his audience and he caters to them, even with his movies. But this one feels a lot like, this one's for me, this one's from the heart. I'm going to make it as low budget as possible, but like literally it's my heart. And so like overall, what's the big, what is the big overall thought about it?
So it's definitely, it's weird to say it's its most personal film yet, because like most of his films have some kind of like personal insight.
Yeah.
But, like, most of it has been about, like, him in his, like, late 20s, early 30s, or 40s, like, as a, as either this, like, kind of, I guess, Gen Xer, like, doesn't know what he wants to do with his life kind of thing, a la, like, Dante, or, like, this, like, creator, you know, who kind of is lost in his own bullshit, which you see a lot in like Chasing Amy. And then there's like the goofball friendship stuff that's just like him and Jay Muse, like the Jay and Silent Bob stuff. So like all of that's really personal, but this is about his childhood. And that's not something he's talked about it a lot. Like, if you are a massive, massive Kevin Smith fan and you've listened to like all his podcast shit, never that, like, there's so much in this movie that you're like, you can point to and go like, that's definitely from real life. So.
Okay. Is it, so, like, give us the elevator pitch for the movie. Like, what, like, I think that, like, are, like, what is the, like, I know what it's about, but what, like, for everybody else, what is the elevator pitch for the movie? Like, what is the movie about?
This kid asking a girl that he's, quote, in love with in high school, to go see a 4:30 movie, where there, you know, it's the build up. It's that like 80s build up of like, not necessarily having sex, but, you know, like, oh, we're going to kiss and we're going to hold hands and maybe there'll be a little, you know, a little playing around in the 4:30 movie. It has a very, very 80s vibe to it. Like, it's very juvenile in the way the 80s movies were.
Now, are we talking juvenile in the way that Porky's is, or are we talking juvenile?
It's not quite Porky's. Like, there's it's more John Hughes-ish. There's no nudity, but there is like there's a lot of, you know, sex talk, and then there's one specific instance of like somebody's definitely like having some kind of sex in the movie theater, and you don't see anything graphic, but it is, and it's played for laughs, but you know, it's there. So
okay, so it's more of like a raunchy John Hughes. I mean, it was what he was trying to do with, basically, like, this feels like a like we all love Mallrats. Like, right? Like, because it was him trying to do John Hughes, but somewhere in the middle of it, like, we all know something happened where it just became too, like, it wasn't John Hughes-y, like, it wasn't Hughes-ian enough. It was more Smith. And so it was, like, this weird bastardization of John Hughes by way of Kevin Smith. But this feels like, this sounds like what you're saying is that it's kind of like that, but it sounds like he might have found the tone, the correct tone for this. And it's like, it's just as dirty as it is sweet. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I mean, like, you know, all you need to do is look at the poster and it invokes a kind of sort of, I don't know, it's a very kind of like, this is the, I know this is going to sound weird, but it's like there's the John Hughes movies and then there's the Savage Steve Holland movies, right?
Yeah.
And this like evokes more Savage Steve Holland without the animation, but a little bit harder into the R rating, right? Like there's more cursing. There's probably just the slight bit of nudity or the possibility of nudity. It's just a little bit raunchier. Is it that kind of kind of comp to it?
Yeah, it's definitely dirtier than most of the Hughes stuff, even though he could go a little blue, but it was always like just kind of hinting at thing. So,
okay. All right. Now, I the big thing is that there's the four kids, right? That like are in the film, but then there's a who's who of like not only USU people, but like actually bigger, like, you know, bigger names. Are most of these just cameos, like people that just fill the world up in like that kind of colorful way that Smith knows how to do?
Everything except I would say Ken Jeong is cameo.
Okay. Now, you're going to have to explain to me why Dietrich Bader is named Damocles. Like, is he the Damocles of Damocles? Or is he, like, is that part of the joke? And I'm going to have to go. If you say it's part of a joke, you have to see the movie to understand it. I will back off, but it made me like him and Logic as Astro Blaster. What the hell?
So one of the best like things, but also biggest distractions about the movie itself. And I kind of get the feeling that it's part of the reason he made the movie, because I guarantee you 30 minutes of cut scenes are just these fake movie trailers that he filmed with tons of people, but there's an actual movie in the movie that they, it's a movie that's like PG-13 that these kids can pay to go see and then sneak into all the R-rated films. So the movie they go see is Astro Blaster and the Beaver Men or something like that. And it's this like fake sci-fi movie, and that's where Logic and Diedrich Bader come in. So
okay, that makes a little bit more sense. And like, you know, like what I do love about Smith is throughout his career, he loves to make movies within movies. It's a thing for me. I really love that whole trope. Like that really bad trope of making movies within movies. Like I think we commented on that movie, that $200 million romantic comedy that Apple made, Fly Me to the Moon. I think I've told you multiple times, the poster looks like a fucking movie within a movie. Like it looks so bad. Like, and then even when you watch the trailer, the movie looks so bad. You think, oh my God, is this a movie within a movie? Are they fucking with us? Like, is it like, if I go to see this movie, is it really secretly a movie? Is it like the Ryan Reynolds plan of like, let's make a movie within a movie, and we'll start Deadpool 2 with this movie for like 20 minutes and make people leave and then start the movie. But yeah, I do love Smith's like predilection towards that. Cause I mean, he's kind of done it his whole career, right? Like since Mallrats. I mean, he has like fake things happening in Mallrats all the time. And then it just kind of goes from there. Right. I kind of love that, like him putting that back into the movie. Now, a weird question. It's 88 minutes long. It's a sub 90 minute movie. How much time is spent in the theater?
Probably. I mean, it's over half the movie, but maybe 65%. There's a lot of stuff in the theater. Like, I mean, it sounds weird to say this. But he could have probably cut this down to a short film, but there's not a lot of plot here.
Okay.
And that makes it, that sounds detrimental, but it really isn't, because like the story has a lot of time to just sit and you kind of can really get to feel like, you know, these characters. It's not anywhere near as frantic as probably most of the last, like, I don't know, four or five films that he's made, where even at their short pace, it's like go, 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 go.
Yes.
Like, there's no time to sit and kind of think. Like, Clerks 3 is great. I loved it. But, you know, there, until the end, I don't think you really have time to like take in what's actually happening.
And okay.
This film doesn't have that.
So it's more of like a, like, and this is what my hope was when I saw it, was that it would be more towards the original Clerks 1 and Chasing Amy, where it's kind of like, it's a little bit more about the characters, and it's only about the characters, and it's a small, like, the single movie setting, like, that's why I was asking, was because it feels like he's, not intentionally, it's just, like, you know, life is a flat circle, right? Even for artists, and oftentimes you have to go back to the beginning in order to start anew, right? And this feels, like, I saw the trailer, I mean, I wanted to see it, like, I genuinely do, and the trailer indicated it looked like it was something a little bit smaller, a little bit more heart. The thing I feel like that has been missing from Smith's movies, for me at least, is the bigger portion of the heart that's within, like, not so much the heart on display, but Kevin Smith's heart into the movies. Like, it always feels like he's gotten better, like, I know everybody fucking talks shit about him technically, but I feel like there are some movies out there that he just doesn't get credit for being like technically like elevated in a way that I don't think that like, you know, he had it early in his career. But at the same time, I feel like there's this little bit of his, like the passion and the heart that he had has gone away from it. So it's like, it works and it's fun and there's heart on display. It just, the passion for the filmmaking isn't there. And I was hoping that maybe this one, because he's telling something that's so personal, that it would go back to a little bit more of a passionate filmmaking experience for him.
Yeah. I think that's definitely there.
Okay.
There's still some of his worst tendencies
of course.
But there's parts in this movie that really, really, like, it's like, God, he's almost there. And it's weird to say because he's made so many films. But, like, and the kids are fucking fantastic. Like, absolutely fantastic. It is maybe the best group of actors he's worked with.
Wow. Okay. That's good. Like, that's
outside of Red State. Outside of Red State. I think okay. Red State's cast is, like, bar none, the best cast he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the most, like, that and Tusk are the two biggest outliers of, like, his whole career.
I would also say Dogma, too.
Yeah, Dogma does have a great cast. You're right.
Yeah. And it is kind of randomly outside of his, like, even though it has his style, like the content in it, just like Tusk and Red State is very outside of his wheelhouse. And I feel like those are his, like, it's weird to say that, like, if you take everything out and you calm it down, his three best films are those films. Like, yeah. I don't even understand how Tusk is a comedy. Until you listen, like, you have to listen to the podcast in order to understand the stupidity of how that movie was created. But it's such a fucking wildly fucking, like, harrowing movie if you don't know the story behind the creation of the movie, right? And then Red State is just, I mean, I feel like that movie honestly deserves, like, a Criterion disc because it has been so maligned. But, like, in the last 20 years, it's become, like, literally, it's become something that, like, if you've seen it, you know, like, there's talking points in that are like, wow, who would have figured that Kevin Smith would have predicted some of this shit that was like, well, I mean, of course he did. I mean, he wrote the script, but some of the shit that gets said in that movie is wildly, wildly, very kind of like at first when you first watched it in what 2013, you're like, man, this is kind of scary. This would never happen. These people would never talk like that. Cut to like 10 years later, and it's like, wow, that's like the rhetoric. Like, he understood. Like, he really understood. Like, I wish that he had, like, he has an affinity for horror films. Like, that's the weirdest part, is that he makes effective horror, and you almost wish that he had gotten to make more horror films, that Red State was a huge, like, was a huge hit. Because he's got not just an ear for it, but he's got an eye for it, too. Like, his most accomplished films are those two films, right? Like, visually.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's something I haven't seen. I didn't see the Yoga Hosers. I didn't see that one.
So.
Yeah, I know.
I've seen it. And the thing that kills it is the casting, is the stunt casting. Like, that's what kills it, because he's very much so, like, Depp is very much so in that weird, you remember that weird phase where he did that, what is that movie that he did that was supposed to be like Pink Panther and Inspector Clouseau? He's very much in that mode. It's horrible. It's horrible. And you can almost tell. Smith is like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Okay, I'll laugh and I'll just keep on shooting it. You know, I mean, we don't talk about, like, we will never talk about Cop Out, just because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Cop Out's not really his, like, it's him doing a job, but yeah, it's not his movie.
No. My favorite, you know what my favorite of his is Zach and Mary Make a Porno. Like, I really love that movie. That's a genuine, like, good rom-com.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of, it's probably the most underrated of his. And it's weird that that's the movie that kind of gave us this current version of Kevin Smith, right? Because
yeah,
he makes that movie and, like, everything about that movie says this should be massive. Like,
yeah,
Judd Apatow level, like, that kind of massive.
Mm-hmm.
But then it only does Kevin Smith money. And, yeah, like, it wrecks him. Like, in a way that even Mallrats didn't wreck him.
Nope.
And so, yeah, it's definitely, definitely underrated. So, yeah, I really think you'll love this movie. Even with all its flaws, mm-hmm, I wound up just being so charmed by it, mostly from the performances. The things that really didn't work for me are the, like, trailers and movies within movies thing. Like, mm-hmm, it was him trying to do kind of what Tarantino and Rodriguez did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. So
that's that. That said, but you know what? Like, I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, I'm gonna, like, I know this just sounds weird, but, like, we've gotten to a point where I feel like everything has to be perfect. And I like shabby. I like shaggy ends, like, ruffled, like, imperfect perfections. Like, that's what makes a movie, right? Like, we've talked about this before. Like, I know that we've talked about Madam Web and all that stuff, but part of the entertainingness is the ununderstanding of certain things and how things work, and so you get something very different. But, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, there's a lot of films that we love that aren't perfect. They're nowhere near perfect. And the ruffled edges are part of what makes them charming, right? And so, like, for me, you saying, like, you know, it works, but there are issues, like, that's part of the charm, right? Like, I've come to accept that about anything that I watch that's made by Kevin Smith, is that there's going to be, like, 5% of it that's just going to be like, what? Why did you do that? Like, that, like, you knew that wasn't going to work, but you still tried it. But that's what's charming, is that, like, they can say a lot about him, but what I always feel like ultimately is that there's always something that he's always trying to experiment with and try to figure out. I think it also comes from the fact that he may have not written all of his movies, but he's actually edited all of his movies. And he, like, the weirdest part is that I feel like he's one of the better editors out there. Like, when him and Mosier were working together, I feel like there was a streak where it was like, they, like, I know that his movies are shabby as shit, and I know that a lot of people didn't like the fact that he would just have a bunch of people hanging out, but that's fucking what Tarantino did. That's what that entire generation did. But if you watch those movies, if you watch Chasing Amy, it's cut so perfectly for performance. Like, it's like he's in love with the performances, right? And so, I don't know, man, like, I don't mind him being, like, you know, shabby and just kind of, like, a little off kilter, because it's part of the charm, at least for me, right? Like, ultimately, you say that, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, I don't mind that. I don't mind that, because there's a little bit of that in all of his films, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
Some more than others, but there is always a little bit of that. I hate to use the word jaunty, but they're like, it's jaunty and awkward sometimes. It just doesn't work, right? But Like, I don't know another filmmaker that when they do stuff, they're like, he's gotten to the point now where, I mean, what is he? He's like 54 or 55? 54. He's 54. I still feel like he's trying stuff. Like, he's not one of those filmmakers that is just giving up. Like, he's definitely doing stuff, and it's like, there's, you know, I don't know. Like, I like him. I like him, and I'm rooting for him every single goddamn time he's making a movie.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'll, even when he's annoying the shit out of me, I'm still kind of just pulling for him, because he's doing it not, it's never that pretentious. You know what I mean?
No.
Like,
absolutely.
There is one person I want to, so Nicholas Cirillo is in this movie, and we've seen him in a couple of things. Like, he was in She-Hulk. He was Cousin Ched in She-Hulk. He's in an episode of Poker Face, but he hasn't done like a ton of stuff.
No, he hasn't, but he,
this kid's a fucking star. He is like electric in this movie, and he's not the lead. You wind up ultimately kind of not liking him, but he's very much in the vein of, what's his name from the last season of Stranger Things? The guitar guy.
Joseph Quinn's character, Quinn, but like, I know who you're talking. Oh God, I can't even think of his name in the show, but Joseph Quinn's character from Stranger Things.
Yeah,
I can't think of his name.
Me either.
But I do.
It's a lot like Eddie. Yeah, it's a lot like that, where you're like, I don't like this guy, but like, I'm kind of with him, you know?
Okay. I like that. I like, so he's basically like from the Jason Lee ilk of like, he's found a new Jason Lee, basically.
Yeah. Very much so. Very much so. So,
all right, that's cool.
So yeah, I really think you'll dig it. I'm excited for you to see it. I'm sure it'll be on VOD in 2 weeks, because that's just the way he rolls. And I absolutely recommend seeing it.
Okay, absolutely. I will. I will definitely be like, I mean, it's always on my, like, his shit is always on my radar. Like, I may not talk about it all the time, but I mean, like, you know, a loquacious big dude. How can you not love him?
He's not so big anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, that heart attack really fucking... The Widowmaker really kind of changed his, like, you know, changed him for the better, which, you know, thank God for that. You know, because the last thing you want to say, like, you know, oh, man, Kevin Smith passed at 52 or at, 48, you know. So I will be checking it out, and I will be reporting back, because I definitely want to see this one, and I love the trailer. So, I have a question for you, because we actually talked about a news item. It's not a news item yet, but it's the whole thing that something is Spider-Man 4 is starting up, right? And we've already heard the rumors that, like, you know, Holland and Zendaya are re-signing for the next movie. But the more interesting news was that it appears that Sony and Marvel, the rumors are, and this could be with a grain of salt, the rumors are that their top choice is Dustin Cretton, the director of Shang-Chi, which you said it instantly. It's like, I kind of want a Shang-Chi 2 before I want Spider-Man 4. It's looking more and more like it's gonna probably be like, he's gonna, like, his reward for trying to do an Avengers movie that got fucked up and imploded is that he's not like, and the Roosters just like, you know, the pivot of like, you know, Luke. I mean, okay, like, let's first just talk about, could you imagine? Can't
blame anybody in any of those scenarios. Like, I wouldn't even guilt like Marvel from moving on from him because like they're in such doldrums. It's like, we talked about it. Like, we got to play hits, guys. Like, we got to bring people back because fuck, like we can't get anything going. So,
yeah, exactly. And so I understand, like, we all understand, right? Like, that's the whole thing, is that we understand that he is like, he was the sacrificial lamb, right? But the thing is it one calf to kill another calf? Like, that's like, because like, you made the salient point, which is like, what the fuck up? What's up with Shang-Chi then? Like, I mean, we've all seen Simu Liu has already started his training again, and the training is usually about 18 months, right? Like, that's what the last movie had, like, him, he was like, I think he was in training for 18 months. So if he just started a couple of months ago, like, we're ramping up towards making Shang-Chi 2. Does that mean that if he's taking on Spider-Man 4, which it's a good choice if he can't get John Watts, right? I mean,
did you see what John Watts said, though?
No, I did not see that.
So what I'm paraphrasing, say? And I might fuck it up. Uh-huh. But you can Google it. So I guess somebody asked him about it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't shade, but it was like, they don't need me to make these movies. These movies make themselves. Oh. They know what they want. They have their script. I'm not... like, I'm just there, basically saying he's a puppet. Like, not that he didn't do anything personal or that he wanted to do, but it's kind of the criticism that some directors have definitely had of Marvel.
Yes.
That these are producer-led movies, not director-led movies. But, and it wasn't real shade. Like, he wasn't bitter. He didn't seem bitter about it.
Okay.
So it was just like, I made three of those movies. They don't need me to make any more of those movies. They don't need anybody to make any more of those movies. So like, whoever takes over, like, great. I'm happy for them. I'll be there. I'll see the movie. But I'm not coming back because there's nothing personal for me to say.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess we've heard about this before, but I also think that because of the way that Sony handled Spider-Man and their extended universe, like, that makes absolute 150% that they would have like they would almost have a chokehold on it. But that also, like, what does that, like, I mean, like, that kind of makes things a little bit more like, okay, does that mean that Cretton, like, is that really a reward for Cretton then? Because, like, if it was between that and Shang-Chi 2, and that's the kind of level of, like, you know, you're going to have basically, like, you know, Kevin Feige's hand is going to be up your ass because it's going to be his puppetry. And you're not going to have a say in the action, which he had a big part of saying stuff in Shang-Chi. You know, it was the whole reason why he was hired there was because of his knowledge of that. Like, his, like, from what I understand, his, like, his untested wealth of action knowledge and how things are created. Like, I mean, he had just made, like, navel-gazing dramas before Shang-Chi. But, like, to see, like, you know, from everything that I heard, he was very adept at that stuff. To take him out of his series and to plop him into Spider-Man, like, as just a manager, a talent manager, I mean, fuck, that's kind of, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, it's gonna do well for his career because, I mean, like, you know, those movies make $1 billion regardless, right?
Yeah.
Even the worst of the Holland Spider-Man movies still made over $1 billion, and the best of them made Avengers type of money, you know. And like, so my question also is that after, like, what happens? Like, where do you go? Like, I know what I would want. I would want it to go back to grounded and back to Pete, like, going to college. Like, and maybe actually having a romance, to which, like, I feel like the biggest problem with that trilogy is that if you're trying to make it about MJ and Pete, like, you failed that assignment, because it is, like, it's more of a Ned love story than it is a Pete love story with MJ. I would like to see it go back to basics and be, like, maybe a college, like, love story about him trying to, like, almost like Groundhog's Day, you know, but not as kind of toxic, where he's trying to court MJ and it's just not working because he's trying too hard, right? Like, something like that would be a great thing. But I honestly feel like, and I was going to ask your opinion, do you think that they're just going to try to go bigger and go like they did with No Way Home, because No Way Home made like close to $2 billion. So they're going to try to redo that and make like a mini Avengers movie.
I mean, yes, but like what sucks is that's what they'll try to do. I don't think that's what they should do.
Right? Like, it should be smaller, right? Like, yeah. I mean, like, it should be a lot smaller. It should be like Homecoming, right? Like, in a weird way, like, Homecoming is very quaint when you look at the other two films, but even quainter, like, even more street level, like, dare I say, Daredevil level. Like, make it a little bit harder. Like, I know that sounds weird, because, like, but I mean, like, as we've talked about in regards to certain movies, or like, you know, when you care about what's happening on screen, like when you actually care about, it's not about a doodad or saving the world. It's literally saving your block or saving the person that you love. It just makes for a better film, like, all around. Like, and I feel like maybe going back to basics and doing a weird soft reboot might actually help, right? Like, I don't know. Like, it's a very weird thing, because I know that everybody is hyped for Spider-Man because they're only thinking about, like, you know, oh, well, you know, I have great memories of No Way Home, da-da-da-da, all this stuff. Like, it's so huge, you know, all the Spider-Man. Like, but are we going to do that again? Or is it going to be like Captain America, where you have no way, like, part of the reason why Captain America, you can't make another Captain America, like, you couldn't make another Captain America movie with Steve Rogers, is because you went so big with Civil War. It was basically an Avengers side quest.
Yeah.
And it's like, you went so big with Spider-Man 3, like, where do you go? Like, do you do another soft reboot? I mean, even Captain America, like, you know, they didn't have Steve. Like, literally had to reboot the whole series and start from ground zero, because it was just too big. Like, how do you top? I mean, you have the first appearance of Black Panther. You have the first appearance of the Spider-Man in the MCU. Like, that shit is big, right? Like, and the same thing with Spider-Man. I feel like you've gotten to a point where it's too big. Like, you can't top it. Like, there is a point where it becomes excessive and just dumb. And that's, like, the whole thing is, like, what are you going to do? Like, Spider-Man and then Doomsday? Like, have Spider-Man, or have, like, Dr. Doom show up? I don't know. Like, it feels like until I see first footage and I see the tone of it, I'm going to be a little concerned, just a little bit, you know, because Sony does, like, I mean, I think that people genuinely forget Sony does what Sony wants to do. I mean, we're all in the bag for Venom Last Dance, but I mean,
did you see the new trailer?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And Mary, the Norman Reedus news, apparently?
No, what's the Norman Reedus news?
That he's Null?
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's I don't know if that's verified or not, but like the trailer popped up and then all this stuff started popping up on my feed, and it's like Norman Reedus will be Noel in Venom: The Last Dance.
Wow, that's a secret that they've kept forever and a day. But I mean, those movies are so CGI gooey that they could have just.
It could just be a voice.
So. Yeah, but also, like, if he has one scene, it could be that, or two scenes, they could have filmed it in August and just plug and play, right? I mean, we heard, like, I heard wild-ass rumors that, like, Madam Web was filming up to a month before, like, I don't know why, but filming a month before its premiere, like, filming additional footage. It's like, I mean, we gotten to the point now where, like, they kind of do that. So, wow, that's actually some pretty big news. Like, I didn't even think, like, I saw the trailer.
I just Googled it. It is a rumor, but, like, it is a hard rumor. Like,
okay.
If it's not him, then, like, somebody's got a lot of shit wrong, because it's in a lot of places.
Okay. I mean, I will definitely, that's a very interesting rumor. Like, that is a very interesting rumor, because we all know that Hardy's leaving after this. Like, at least that's what he said, that he's done with this last one, that this is the best that they can do, which is wild to me, to make me think that. To have Norman Reedus come in with his fan base and it only be one movie, that's kind of wild. But we will see. I mean, you know, Sony has never been the smartest people when it comes to these things.
But here's the thing: if it makes a shit ton of money, like, mm-hmm. is it the last one?
No, it won't. It'll be Venom, really the last dance, or the last dance, and then the last dance. Because I mean, you know, who turns down $20 million? Even Tom Hardy, as mercurial and weird as he is, I don't think he turns down $20 million. And they're like, let's do another movie. Okay, yay. Yes, let's all do another movie.
I mean, we talked about Beetlejuice last week. So, like, we now know what the box office results of that are. Do we think this is going to be the last Beetlejuice film?
Hell no.
I mean, $100 million?
Yeah.
Like, it was, what was it, the third best opening of the year or something?
Yeah, like, it was the third best opening.
I mean, it's still not, like, gonna do Wolverine Deadpool levels of money, but, this is a comparatively, relatively small Tim Burton, like, Lego sequel, whatever, and it will, like, turn a substantial profit.
Oh yeah, like a huge profit. And I think we both said last week it takes the speed bumps away from Tim Burton's career, like, because he's been through a bumpy patch recently, and it kind of smooths it out and makes it, so all we need to do is just basically give Tim Burton free reign. Yes, you dumb shits. That's what you always do with Tim Burton. You let him do the Tim Burton-ness. Part of the reason why his movies haven't worked is because they feel like Netflix movies, which they literally are. But if you give him, like, the space to do something more handmade, you're gonna get something like this, and you're gonna get his fandom back. I mean, it's just simple equations. But yeah, you're right. Like, if it's a huge hit, which it appears it's going to be, like, you know, I mean, I always find it funny that the last two Venom movies have been huge and everybody acts like it's a surprise. It's like, you guys do realize how many fans of Venom there are. Like,
and just not even like comic book fans. Like,
no,
he's a lot like Deadpool. He's become this like weird kind of like casual fandom thing. You know?
I mean, he's very much so like Punisher too.
Yeah,
like, you know, in a lot of ways, like,
if you take out the fucking the cops using the Punisher, it's a fucking totem for whatever anyway, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, yeah,
but yeah.
But did you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? Like you said, like the casual fan, like the person that has never read a comic book in their life, but they have seen Todd McFarlane's drawings of Venom.
They vaguely remember the old Spider-Man animated series. Like, oh yeah, Venom, like he, you know, liked to eat people, but you know they couldn't say that in the cartoon, or just shit like that. And it's this crossover, you know, that Marvel weirdly has with lower tier characters that DC only has with its upper. It's funny, right? So like it's DC's upper echelon, like their pantheon of characters that have that kind of crossover. So that's why they keep dipping into that shit. But for Marvel, it's definitely their lower tier characters that have that. Like outside of maybe like Captain America, you know, like Iron Man definitely has his fans for sure, and a lot of them. But like most of the fans of Iron Man that aren't comic book readers are not fans of Iron Man. They're fans of Robert Downey Jr.
Exactly. Like the fandom is not, like you said, it's not towards the character, it's towards the actor.
Yeah. So Spider-Man's probably their one big one that has that kind of like crossover appeal that's not just comics, but like everybody else that has that appeal, it is, you know, Deadpool, Punisher, maybe the Hulk a little bit. And people will say that those are major characters. And I guess, I mean, they kind of are now, but that's why they became major characters.
Mm-hmm. Like,
in 1999 or 98 or whatever, nobody gave a fuck about Deadpool. Like, like that's a drum I was beating that I was like, this guy's great. I love this character. Nobody gave a shit. So.
No, not at all. But like fandom kind of did, like true fandom, like true comic book fandoms, right? Like not this, like, you know, what we've had the rise of, which is just the rise of celebrities doing superhero films and superstars doing it. But it's weird. It really is weird to think that there are certain sectors that just naturally grew out of things, right? Like the Venom fandom is very weird to me. Like I would love somebody to do a deep dive on that, on where it started and how it grew and populated to the point to where Sony was so worried about shit back in 2004, 2005, they literally forced Sam Raimi out of the Spider-Man making business.
Yeah.
Like that to me is like the ultimate crime, because we really should have six, like, I know it sounds weird, but we should have at least six Tobey movies that culminate in a true Sinister Six movie, like at the end of his sixth movie, like, because that's what he was working towards, right? And if you give him, like, I also to be perfectly honest, I really, really do lament the loss of John Malkovich as
the Vulture. Yeah,
well, the Vulture.
Yeah,
I mean,
even though Keaton, like, was great, but yeah,
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 it's great, but. Malkovich in 2007 or 8. And then what's her name as Black Cat? Jesus, I can't even think of her name now. The one that played Jyn Erso in Rogue One.
I can't think of her name either.
That would have been like that. That's kind of like, and I feel like, I almost feel like I know, like, we're probably going to eventually get Sydney Sweeney cast as Black Cat. Like, it's kind of like the thing that's been bounding around, and I feel like that's probably the natural order of things. But it's like, I also kind of like, I'm like, oh man, like, it always brings me back to the whole thing of like, they ruined Sam Raimi's Spider-Man plans because they wanted Venom, and they gave them a Venom, but it was so just kind of like, I don't know. Like, I like, ultimately, I'm always kind of like going back to the fact that, like, as much as I like Venom, I don't love Venom. And he kind of ruined the, like, you know, the third Spider-Man movie. Like, it's not Raimi's fault. Like, I always often think about that. It's like, even in its extended form, you've seen like the editor's cut, right?
Yeah.
It's better, but it doesn't, like what we were just talking about with Kevin Smith. Like, there's a different, you can absolutely tell. Like, how do you go from Spider-Man 2, which is possibly, for my money, it's a perfect movie. Like, it's not just a perfect superhero movie, it's a perfect movie. How do you go from that to Spider-Man 3? Like, literally, how do you do that? And the answer is Sony. Sony and Venom. Like, that's what happened. Like, you had to have Venom. You couldn't just let him do whatever he wanted to do. And I don't know, man. Like, it's just, it's a wild ass thing. And like, ultimately, it goes back to me and my hive mind of like, oh shit, Spider-Man 4 is probably not going to be good. Like I know that Marvel is going to bend its wheel and Kevin will make sure that it will be, it have the best possible foot forward. But I don't know, man. I don't know. It's going to be one of those wait and see, right? See how it comes together. But ultimately, I don't know. I'm a little scared. I truly, I'm a little scared for this.
Yeah. You know, we want to look at Deadpool Wolverine and be like, Marvel's getting their mojo back. But like, I also can look at it and be like, that could be just an outlier. Because that's like remnants of so many other things. And also Feige maybe not being the driving force in something for the first time in a while. Not that he wasn't, I'm sure he was absolutely creatively like inputting on all of that, but he's probably not going to be the guy saying like, hey, make jokes about this and this and this and this. That's coming from Reynolds and his crew.
Yeah.
So, it's, I mean, it's really going to be sometime next year before we, I mean, maybe by the time we see Captain America, we'll be able to like really say, hey, that I think they're back on track. Might be a lot of shit they leave in the dust and just never mention again, like the Eternals, but maybe they're back on track.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hopefully, but for me, it's really a wait and see. Like you, like it's like a wait and see. Let's see what happens over the next couple of movies, because realistically, like you said, like Deadpool and Wolverine, I feel like is a random outlier. Like that's, like you said, that's Reynolds and his crew of people and Feige kind of going, like being the tastemaker, right? Like going, okay, move this here, move that here. Yes, you can play in this garden, but you can't play in this bouncy house. Yeah. Like, you know, which, okay, fine. That's good. That's cool. But it doesn't help us. I'm going to ask you something right before we get into a little bit more stuff. Since we're on Marvel things, and it really kind of made me think about this is like, because Reynolds has come out and said like, you know, enough of this tomfoolery of trying to get a new Blade going. Let's give Wesley his send off. Let's give him a legacy sequel, which would be like literally the first and only legacy sequel that Marvel will have done. Like, I'm kind of for this, and I wanted to know what your thoughts were about not so much dropping Mahershala as much as it is just putting that shit on pause and maybe going with a different approach, because as we've seen, they've had Mahershala cast since 2020, since pre-pandemic, and they have not been able to do anything.
Nope. So there was a recent storyline in the Marvel books where basically somehow all the vampires in Marveldom figured out a way to blot out the sun, which is a, like, that's from well, kind of, sort of from Blade. Like, they figure out a way to blot out the sun. The vampires kind of take over. It becomes this whole, like, everything's overrun with vampires, and like it turns into just an all out MCU vampire story. But I say that just to say, like, taking inspiration from that and from the success of, say, a film like Logan, which pulls its story kind of sort of from the old man Logan story arc, to have a older Blade be like one of the, like, last bastions, like somehow the vampires have taken over. You know what I mean? Like an old man Logan type of story, but with Blade, with him as Blade. And that way you're not, it's not Blade entrenched in the MCU. You don't have
to, it's
like, you
own...
can reference that stuff. Like, maybe there were other heroes. Maybe there are other heroes in the story, but you don't have to, like, immerse it in this MCU mythology. It can just be its own thing with, like, small hints of other things. I think it would absolutely fucking work.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what my theory, like, I just keep on thinking about it, and it's like, it's really a kind of a brilliant idea. Like, if you just give him his send-off, like, it both... It kind of, like, helps with things, like, in getting goodwill back. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where it's, like, I don't know, like, there's a lack of goodwill going on in the MCU with fandom right now. And to get something back, because every time we mention Blade, it's like, how the hell can they not make a Blade movie? Like, it's so easy. Like, they gave you three examples.
Yeah, it's weird to just, for them to be like, we want to get it right. We want to get, like, and it's like, you want to look at the thing and be like, how is this the thing you can't get right? This is a very simple thing. I think you're overthinking a lot of it. But I also think part of the problem is they want him to be a central figure in the new MCU, and they can't figure out how to make that happen. But to me, like, that's the problem. You're trying to make these characters that are the center of their own story be the center of a universal story, and you can't fucking do that. Like, Blade is not that. Like, the only way to make him that character is to do, like, what I just said. Like, the whole fucking world has to be a vampire for him to be the center of the universe. You know, otherwise he's just this dude who hunts vampires.
Exactly.
That's kind of what makes it cool. Like, there can be, like, a big, you know, like, plot that he has to stop. But, like, that's not why you're rooting for him, you know?
Yeah.
So,
no.
Yeah, I'm all for give Wesley, like, one more shot, but I'm also at this point never fucking thought I'd say something like this. And I'm pretty sure I've said that before. I'm also like, fuck everything. Gambit the movie is what the fuck I want. Like,
yeah, seriously. I just want Channing Tatum to do that voice forever, because it's so stupid but so brilliant.
Look, I've never liked Gambit as a character. Hated him in the cartoon. Any time, like, the X-Men books would, like, lean towards, like, he was fine as, like, seasoning in the books, but when he was the central focus and it became, like, the Thieves Guild and like all of that shit, I was like, my eyes couldn't roll far enough back in my head how much I just hated it.
Yeah.
But I swear to God, if next year it's like Channing Tatum, Gambit, the Thieves Guild, like, I like, fuck it, I'm in. Like, just let's go.
Actually, you know what I would want from a Gambit is not a movie. I'd want a TV series.
Like, oh yeah,
give me like, Channing's first.
Yes. You want to talk about a series that would light Disney Plus up? I think that would do it, man.
and here's the thing. Here's the thing. If and I know how to get him. Get his future wife to direct all the episodes.
Oh God!
Like, yeah. Give her creative control. Like, he has to have control creatively, because everything I've heard, he's very much like Ryan Reynolds with his Gambit character, which he understands and knows everything about Gambit. So you give the guy carte blanche, but you also give him the person that it feels like he is a creative, like, you know, like is his creative counterpart, and you just let him go wild. You make, yeah, like, you let him do, just go to New Orleans and do whatever the fuck they want to do in the swamp. Like, just let them cast whoever the fuck they want and just make it this, like, I have a dream. And the dream is that the Gambit film is literally like, it takes inspiration from Rowdy Harrington's original fucking Roadhouse. Like,
can we do like the that. Gambit and Blade movie? Like, can oh those both be a thing? So like, like, I mean, it's New Orleans. Vampires would definitely be occupying New Orleans.
Oh, hell yeah.
Maybe those two characters, like, because Gambit didn't have a world, so maybe,
no,
like, they saved Blade's world somehow, and so, like, Gambit lives with Blade. I mean, I don't, and fuck it, take Elektra with you. Like, give me that. Like, we know where X-23 went. That's fine. Those three characters, like, fighting vampires in New Orleans as, like, the Midnight
Suns. Call it Midnight Suns. Like, we're actually, you know what? No, Midnight Sons and Daughters.
Yeah.
I mean, too clever, but at the same time,
I'm with you.
But then also, to add insult to injury, because I'm always about giving a middle finger to Dunkin' Donuts CEO, add Charlie Cox into it. And complicate matters with Charlie Cox's Daredevil, because I mean, he is a part of the Midnight Sun, so it wouldn't be out of the ordinary to have him there. Though with the way that things are going, it looks, but anyways, yeah, like, it would be so awesome to see those three
Just fucking fighting vampires in New Orleans, like, just slumming it, like, living like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like, their headquarters is in a fucking sewer kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
just doing the dirty work. Like, yeah, give me that movie, man. Fucking, I would eat that shit up.
I would, oh my God. Like, or give me three individual series, Elektra, Gambit, and Blade, all leading to a Midnight Suns team-up movie. Like, yeah, do something like that. Like, they're the, like, you have three actors that literally, yeah, they may be in their 40s and 50s, like late 30s to early 50s, but damn, now's the time to do it. Like, you, like, they are all very capable, and I know it sounds weird, but like, I don't think that they realized how much love people had for the jaunty ass Fox Marvel universe, but there is a lot of love for that jaunty ass universe, because that's what we grew up with, right? Like, regardless of the Bryan Singer bullshit of it all, like, everybody kind of grew up with, like, those were our superhero movies when we were in our, like, 20s, right? Like, that's what we got. And so, like, it's kind of like it would be a continuation of it, but in a weird, different sort of way. With, like, I don't know, like, I would love that. I would just love to see any of those characters come back and be in something that's elevated beyond, like, what they were in. Because, like, let's be honest, like, Blade is, like, there are 1.5 good Blade movies, right? Like, the first Blade, it's the opening scene, and then it just never lives, like, it's good, but it just never lives up to that opening scene. Blade 2 is, like, good, but it's good in an early 2000s sort of way, right? Ripping off of Aliens.
Yeah.
The third one, man, like, I'm a fan of it, but at the same time, I can see how terrible, it, like, just from top to bottom, it's a movie that just doesn't understand what a Blade movie is. Like, it just doesn't.
There's some good stuff in there, though. Like,
there really is.
And it was, it's this, like, litmus test of, like, can we make this bigger? Can we bring in more? And, like, it doesn't work for several reasons. A big part of it is the star of the film was fucking vehemently opposed to sharing the screen. So that caused some problems. But you also had a director that didn't know how to deal with his star. Like, it's a lot of things, but there's some stuff in that movie, like that early Ryan Reynolds let loose thing that,
yeah.
I mean, he's not Hannibal King, because that's not the way Hannibal King acts, but it is this proto Deadpool kind of thing.
Yes, it very much so is.
I mean, he's walking around wearing a fucking stick-on name tag that says, like, I haven't seen this movie in decades, Adam. It says, "Hello, my name is Fuck You." I remember, it's etched in my brain as one of the greatest gags I've ever seen in certainly a superhero film. Like, that's, like, fucking brilliant. "Hello, my name is Fuck You."
Everything that he does in that movie is so on point and brand that when you watched it, like, I still remember watching it opening day, I was like, so Ryan Reynolds is officially a star now. We can just kind of pack it in and he'll do whatever he wants to do, because, like, that role is so just microly fucking perfect that you just can't see anything else. Like, he takes the air out of the room whenever he's in that movie. Like the moment where they're trying to fix him up, like, you know, like, cause he got shot, and he decides to tell the worst, awful, un-PC dad joke ever. Like, it's one of my favorite moments, because, you know, like, and if you guys don't know, it's just, what did the one vampire say to the other? I won't add in what it was saying, and I won't say the punchline, but you get the point, and you can watch the movie to see what he says. Like, to this day, I still remember that. Why? Because it's Ryan Reynolds unpacked and unleashed, right, in an R-rated movie, what we would later get in Deadpool. So it's like, and the whole thing, the "my name is Fuck You," like, all of these moments are like, there are like micro moments in the movie that make you go, wow, like seeing Patton Oswalt in a movie, right? Like in a vampire movie playing Q, like basically playing Q. Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah.
Before she was Natasha Lyonne.
That was like right. Was it right before or right after? Because she like fell off. Because, I mean, if you read her story, you'll know why. But, like, drug use, like, all kinds of problems. I don't know if that was right before or right after, though.
It was right before. It was literally her last role and stuff. Like, I mean, she had been building up to, like, bigger things. Like, "But I'm a Cheerleader" and all that other good stuff.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills. But, I mean, guys, read her story. It's harrowing shit. And to think that she's come back in the way that she has is a testament.
I mean, it's Downey Jr.
Yeah, like, level.
Yeah. Level, I mean, she hasn't landed her Iron Man, but yeah. So,
like, let's be honest, like, Poker Face is, like, I feel like her Iron Man. Like, that's her, like, I feel like we're probably going to get 10 seasons of Poker Face. Like, she literally wants to be. If you think about it, she, like, I know this sounds weird, but she is literally the, now that she's in her 40s, she's literally the equivalent of Peter Falk. Like, Yeah. The rambling style, the fucking kind of shabby chic, the kind of, like, she's literally, like, she's become probably, like, I know that she's said that Peter Falk is one of her idols, and she essentially with Netflix become Peter Falk. So, like, if that's what, I feel like that's kind of her Iron Man, right? Like, her Iron Man is Columbo. But, you know, Columbo fans understand what that means. And, yeah. So, I'm there for anything she does. So, like, maybe a little bias. A little bias. But, yeah. I mean, everybody in that movie is like, like, it's funny because Blade, now you're making me want to watch the Blade trilogy. Like, I, not to say that I didn't already watch it after Deadpool and Wolverine, but just this conversation makes me really want to, especially that one, because, like, I haven't seen it in probably since the Blu-ray was released.
Did I tell you, so I discovered I do not fucking have them?
Oh, you, like, don't?
I had them all on DVD at one point, and I guess I traded in my DVDs because I intended to buy them on Blu-ray, and I never did. So, well, like, after Deadpool Wolverine, I was like, I'm going to watch the Blade movies. And I went to go pull them out, like, I have a massive collection of, like, superhero shit on DVD and Blu-ray. And I was like, how do I know? I was like, I know I had these movies. Like, I know I had them on DVD. And I was like, fuck, I bet I traded in the DVDs, was going to buy the Blu-rays, and then I never did. So, they're in my Amazon cart. So, well, I'll get them eventually.
Oh, I was gonna say, why didn't you just go down to your used record store place to see if they have them?
I went to McKay's a few weeks ago. I tried to get some shit in. I was like, they'll have the Blade movies at least on DVD. I'll just rebuy the DVDs. I'm sure I'll get not a single copy. Of course, this was after Deadpool Wolverine, so maybe that's why. But I was like, McKay's is a used bookstore chain for anybody that doesn't know in the Tennessee area. Massive, like, they sell tons of used shit. And I was like, they've got copies of Blade. No. I was like, what the? I was like, to be fair, I'm not the only person that had that idea. I'm sure after that movie, like, the two weeks after that movie, there was a massive, like, oh shit, I want to rewatch the Blade
movies. Yeah. I mean, that first one is all style. I fucking love that first one. And you know what? You know, it's a weird thing. I love that. Like, which, but Blade is all about fucking Kris Kristofferson, the old craggly man, and it being the fucking thing in the world. Like, that introduced me to Kris Kristofferson, and I didn't realize that I needed Kris Kristofferson in my life until 1998, and went back and was like, oh, he's a part of the Highland? How did I not fucking know that? Like I just, like, my brain didn't wrap around it. And it's like, I feel like Blade is all, for me, all about whistling. As much as, like, the first scene is all about Blade and that's all cool, but then everything after that for me is whatever fucking Kristofferson craggily says. Like, craggily says, like, he gives fucking Nick Nolte in any one of his roles as the old man number one a run for his money. Because that motherfucker, like, both of them are sitting there with the craggliest of voices, like, stupid, like, weirdly inflected, like, Texas, like, weird ass, like, sayings in the world, like, canner butter that toast all the time, Blade. You know what's gonna happen. Like, I just love it. I just fucking love that movie. And now I'm probably going to watch Blade, 1998's Blade, right after we get off the phone and right after before. You know? Yeah. So yeah. Love it. Right. I'll say go see Blade, guys.
So you've been playing Star Wars Outlaws, which just came out about a week and a half ago, maybe two weeks ago.
A week ago today, but then I foolishly bought the gold package, which had the first two DLC packages for free, and you got the disc 3 days in advance, which I did. I actually got it 4 days in advance. I got it on Monday, and I started playing right after I uploaded it. I started thing on Monday. So, yeah, I'm officially 15 hours into playing this game.
And have you gotten to outer space yet?
Finally got to outer space. Okay, so, guys, I'm going to tell you this. Okay, so, like, I friend of the show, old school film dispenser podcaster, Justin Gregory. I still talk to him. Like, we still talk, and we talk video games a lot. And I posted something to him. I told, like, I posted my frustrations, and then he responded, which was hilarious because he always responds to my video game posts because he always plays. I mean, he's a big video gamer. And his response was very unexpected, which was, I was like, I figured that he had played it. He goes, "This is the exact reason I have not played this video game. I've heard nothing but bad things about it. Like, even update patches aren't working for this game." And it's very true. This game, even at, like, okay, so, like, I normally start at normal, right? Like, when I play a game, I start at normal. I'm in story mode, and this fucking game, one of the hardest games I've played, and one of the more frustrating ones. I don't know if I'm going to last for long. I mean, I say that, and I've played 20 hours about. So far, the game has not been the kind of adventure game that I want. It's a lot of Splinter Cell sneaking around. And when you don't sneak around and you decide to go balls out against something, like, literally, the tidal wave of Imperial troopers that come out to get you to actually handle, and you end up dying. Like, the game is impossibly frustrating. At this point, I finally have gotten my ship to go into space. And the first job I have in space, get this, and it took me 4 hours to fucking beat it because the AI is so weirdly glitchy. They can see you even if you're behind the fucking, behind a smoke screen, which is supposed to. I go into an Imperial fueling station where I have to pull a list, and literally sitting there creeping through. I spent one point like 20 solid minutes just trying to figure out the timing of the stormtroopers walk to get to a place. Like, it is, and then, like, the best part is that no matter what you do at the end, the alarm goes off, even if you've sabotaged everything, because like, basically a hacker, like, because you're a criminal. And you're supposed to turn off all the cameras and all the secondary, right? And you're supposed to be able to, like, make a dash for it, stop some of the troopers, and that's it. There were literally 40 stormtroopers on the docking bay in this ship that I was in trying to get out of. They were literally grenades at me. Like, I was like, how the hell am I supposed to get out? And basically, like, what I've learned is you run away as far as you can and then come back because there's so many concerns. Like, it's literally, I'm sitting here going, how do I do this? Like, there's that are like, Jesus Christ, what am I supposed to do? Like, am I supposed to start a ruckus? But anytime you start a ruckus, like, even on story mode, it's like literally out of nowhere. 15 stormtroopers, and here's where they don't get it right. Stormtroopers in this game are highly accurate with their their laser blasts. Highly accurate. Like, so much so that after, like, about 10, you're like, oh, well, I'm dead. Like, and you literally see them come out of nowhere. Kind of like, it's like, do you remember Brothers with the walking? And you just see thousands of them out of nowhere. That's literally how I felt in this game. It was just like, yeah. Let me just turn around and see what happens when I sound an alarm. Holy shit. I mean, literally, they just kept on coming out until they kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is not a fun game. I'm not saying it's not, like, it doesn't give me a sense of accomplishment when I do something. I will say this. I will give this game this. Its flight system is awesome. Like, is better than any other Star Wars game that I've played. Why? Because they've solved the thing of, like, if you get within a... You know how, like, games have gun auto-lock? And it's like, spaceship games never have that? So Star Wars game decided to give us an auto-lock. So, like, if you can get your... If you can get your gun sights within... like this, like red couch, this red circle, which is not hard, but it's definitely posing to if you've never, like, if you don't play simulator games. It got me a little bit, but then once I figured it out, what it does is that if you get into that circle and you hold down the gun lock, it takes over the flight for you so you can shoot. So, like, you get locked in, you lock. And all you have to do is shoot, and it will follow. You don't have to, like, all you have to do is keep your pedal on, but you don't have to move it around because it's locked in, and it's doing the flight for you. But it's super cool because, to be honest, that's what I think, is that, like, you got to get them in the little circle and da-da-da-da. This game doesn't, it's actually, like, the weirdest part is, the funnest part about this game is the flight. So, yeah.
Yeah, I want to play it, but, like, everything I've read and talking to you, I'm like, this is the kind of game that, like, it would wind up taking over my life. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's a lot for me. But, I mean, it looks so much fun.
So, like, that's the problem, is that it's not fun. It's frustrating. I've heard that there's a big build coming out that's supposed to, of course, correct a lot of the issues that are going on in the game. Like, so the AI is either super stupid or super smart. Like, there's no in-between on this. Like, there's no subtlety in the game. And what I found was... This is the funniest part, is it doesn't matter whether you're in story mode or Jedi mode, or I can't remember. It was like smuggler mode, which I think is the hardest mode. It doesn't matter. The AI is all the same. There's no level of difficulty in this game. And I feel like, and I was reading reviews, and a lot of people are saying that, is that the game, no matter what level you set it at, is at an expert level. And I feel like, I hope that Massive and Ubisoft bring out this big game patch they're talking about bring out. They already brought out one that solved some image issues. But for the most part, it is it's not a glitchy game. It's impossibly hard. And at a certain point, when something becomes that hard for me, I just kind of throw up my hands and I go, I want a game to be fun. I want a game to be Spider-Man, right? Like, for me, that's the level. Like, hardness, Ghost of Tsushima is about as hard as I'll go. Like, right? Like that one is, like, it's a difficult game, but it's, like, a challenging but worth it game. Like, Star Wars right now, in its current Star Wars Outlaw in its current iteration, there's too much fucking going on in this game. And most of it doesn't even have to be about, isn't even about the, like, I haven't even talked to you about the allegiances and the allegiance engine and how, like, you, like, because you're an outlaw, like, you have the three crime syndicates, Crimson Dawn, the Pikes, and the Hutts. And you have to do missions, and you have to balance your worthy level, or your, like, relationship level with them. And, like, so two out of three you can get good with, but one will always be, like, in bad relationships with, because you're always double-crossing them. Like, in this thing that I just did, these last two games, I had a choice to make on whose alliances that I wanted to be a part of and whose, like, relationship I wanted to level up on. And, like, it's split-second decisions. And it's like, if you do this, you'll be in good with the Hutts. If you do this, you'll be in good with Crimson Dawn. And the funniest part is, I think that they intentionally made it so that you cannot please the Pikes, because the Pikes are just a bunch of assholes.
That's pretty good.
Right? Like nothing. I tried to do one thing for the Pikes, and then they totally fucked me over on this job. And I was like, oh, fuck the Pikes. I'm going to just anytime a Pike job comes up, I'm going to double cross them. And it's literally like, because every single time you try to do something for them, they're never pleased. And they always try to double cross you. So it's like, fuck them. But I mean, if you think about it, like, and you even laughed about it, like, that's literally any kind of interaction we've ever had in video games, or more importantly, in the animated series with the Pikes. Like, oh shit, even like the Mandalorian and Boba Fett, both, like the Pikes were just a bunch of dick assholes. So there is that, and there's like, it's a beautifully rendered game. Like I was like genuinely shocked at how big this game is. Like I've only been to 3 worlds so far, but these worlds are like literally an entire Star Wars game before. Like each of them have their own, like they have like multiple cities, and the cities are thriving, and you can go to different vendors, you can interact with people. There's like I was reading up on it, there's literally thousands of jobs you can do. Like not like little like crime jobs or helping people. There's literally thousands over multiple planets. Which is wild. I just haven't gotten to that yet. I mean, I'm barely flying. I haven't even gotten the droid that you're supposed to get. Like, I have a co-pilot mechanic, who's a Greedo. I can't think of the Greedo's names. And I just saved this dude that's inside of a glass jar. And he was an accountant for a corrupt Imperial officer. That now you have, he's a part of your crew because he's like smart. But I mean, in theory, I should be loving the shit out of this game, loving it. I should be raving about it to you, but it's fucking, it's like Splinter Cell in the way that like Splinter Cell and Metal Gear Solid were games that frustrated me more than they entertained me. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, waiting in a cramped spot with my character for 15 minutes is not what I want to do. But if you don't do that, there are consequences. I tried. Like, I literally tried. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but there's sometimes where I'll do a save point. Like, I'll do a save so I know that I'm okay. And then I'll just test things out to see what happens in the world, right? And this is a kind of game where if you don't do what they are prescribing you to do, all hell breaks loose. Like I was in a substation inside of the spaceship, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna drop some thermal detonators on these motherfuckers and be done with it. That was the biggest mistake in the world. Because literally all of the stormtroopers, like to kill 4 stormtroopers, I killed them and they blew up really nice. Like it was great to watch these fucking stormtroopers like fly up in the air. But literally 2 seconds later, a platoon of stormtroopers came out and just decimated me. Like literally, I was alive for 2 seconds, and it just, because it doesn't want you to do that. It doesn't want you to kill these guys. It wants you to go around them. It wants you to find a way to sneak with your little pet, like as a distraction tool or like as a helper, because you got this like this little you got this little pet that helps you. That's like an AI third party character, like all these games usually have. Like, you know, sometimes they're just an extra person, but this one it's like a little creature. You've seen him on the games things. And like, dude, it is like no joke. It is one of the hardest games I've played in recent memory. So much so that I'm not even having fun. And so over the next couple of days, like, and the only reason why I'm playing is because I spent $120 on the game. I mean, you spend $120, you can't return it. What do you do?
Yeah.
You play it until another game comes out, until another game that interests you comes out. And so, and since there's nothing on the horizon, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to try to get good at Star Wars Outlaws. I mean, they really took, like, so for people to understand, I feel like they took the Outlaws thing and basically they made an equivalent, a Red Dead Redemption equivalent in the Star Wars universe. So if you love that kind of complex gaming system, I feel like you're going to love this once the bugs are out of it. I don't know if the game is for me. I mean, 20 hours into a game that supposedly is supposed to be what? Like, the main mission course is, like, I think 80 hours, I think people are saying. So I'm, like, 25% into the game or where I should be. And I, like, usually about that time is where I really get a handle on the game. I have not gotten a handle on this game, I'll be honest. I have not gotten any kind of handle on this game.
Yeah. That's,
I know it sucks, right? Because, and who knows, maybe if you buy it, you know, it goes on sale. Like that'll be the key, right? Like some games.
Yeah. When you can get it for like 30 or 40 bucks. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah. You know, yeah, maybe even then, like it's such a time investment. I don't know if I would, like, that's part of the reason I never got into a lot of Star Wars games. Like, mm-hmm. people love Knights of the Old Republic, but, like, I played it for, like, 2 or 3 days, and I was like, this feels like it's going to be a huge time investment because it's so, like, and also so many, like, different outcomes you can kind of generate. Like, mm-hmm. I was just like, I don't think this is for me. I'm such a straightforward, I mean, I'm a platformer kind of guy, unfortunately. But yeah, like I want to be like, maybe if I'm still gaming when I'm like 70 and retired, I mean, like I'm going to go back and play all these games and spend, you know, 3 weeks, just nothing but playing this game, 24, you know, sleeping and playing this game. And that's it.
Yeah. It's tough. It really is tough. Like I'm disappointed because it's the first game, it's the first Star Wars game that I haven't really liked. Like, I loved the Jedi games, Fallen Order and the last one. I really liked those games a lot. Like, so much so that I went 100% on both of them. And that's not something that I normally do on games. Like, Spider-Man games are the exception. Like, that those games I go 100% on just because I need to. Like, there's just something about them that like, you know, that playability is something that it just, I don't know, like I can't help it but want to do that. This one is like one of those things where I may just do the main mission and then just go, okay, I'm done. Let me go find an older game to go ahead and go and do, because, like, I don't know. I mean, and they're supposed to have DLC content in this stuff. Like, they're supposed to have seasons of stuff that you can do. Like, they're already, like I signed up for it, right? Like, I have a season, which is 2 DLC packets that are supposed to be available to me sometime soon. And I'm like, really? It seems more like a threat and less of a promise at this point. So I'll keep you posted and see if, like, you know, at a certain point it becomes, oh, well, you know, you only have to work 50 hours. But then once you get to the 50 hours, like, that's when it really starts. To which, you know, gamers understand that all too well, right? Like, we all understand that whole thing of, like, yeah, that's too much investment for me. Like, the Destiny games are just too much for me. Like, it's too much investment. Like, Call of Duty, like, it's just too much investment for me. I can't handle it, especially with like 4-year-olds being able to pawn me.
I just want to have a good time.
exactly. And at this point, when a Zelda game isn't even fun anymore, I don't know what to say, man. But anywho.
So yeah, I've been playing a game as well, although it's not nearly as involved, of course, as yours. A few weeks ago, I picked up the Princess Peach Showtime game. Yeah, I played the demo and it seemed kind of fun, but also, like, again, platformer, easy, not time consuming, and also not. I don't know. I don't get invested in it. Like, oh, it's fun for the 15 or 20 minutes I'm playing it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not like, oh, I like Spider-Man was like that. Zelda was like that. I'm like, no, I have to keep going. I have to keep going. Like these games, like, oh, I beat the level. Okay. I'll put it down. I'll play some more later or tomorrow or whatever. It is a really, really fun game. Most of the game mechanics are really inventive and like it looks fantastic, but oh my god, did the levels are extremely short, so I understand why they did this, but they royally fucked up because like there's collectibles in the game. I mean, that's part of gaming now, is like replay value. So there's like all these little things you can go back and get. But like a lot of the levels, if you miss part of it, you have to start the level all over again. Like you can't.
What? Like,
it's not more or less open world.
Yeah, no, and, it's like closed world, it sounds like.
But the problem is it's presented to you like it's open world. And when you start playing it, you realize that, like, oh, no, once you're in the level, it's more like a classic Mario game where, like, well, actually, not even really, because even in Mario, as long as you can get back to the previous screen, like, as long as, you know, it's not like a huge chasm you got to jump or something like that, you can just keep moving backwards through the game. You can't do this. Like, the game just keeps going. And so you can't really go backwards if you're like, oh, hey, that was a thing I needed to collect back there. You just can't go backwards most of the time. And it's very frustrating because it doesn't allow you to really explore the worlds that they create, which sucks because they're, for the most part, really, really interesting.
Now, you previously played, it sounds like this is almost the antithesis of the last Mario game that you played over the summer, or the beginning of the summer. I cannot remember the game, what it was called. but that was open world. Even though there was a timer on it, it was an open world where you could explore and do things and kind of...
Yeah.
This one seems like it's more about... the timing and speed play.
You got to kind of know where everything is, which
it is, yeah,
basically in a lot of instances leads you to like, oh, I like, I'm not going to replay this level 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go online and see where this thing is.
Yeah,
so that that kind of takes the fun out of it, you know.
Exactly. No, it absolutely does.
But the levels are extremely short. Like, most levels, like, if you were speed running, most levels can be completed in under, like, 7 or 8 minutes. Like, it's extremely short. But that's fine if you could really explore while you're there. And a lot of times you can't. So, yeah, it's not... So the Mario Rabbids games, which I was a huge, huge fan of, we talked about, like they were $60 when they came out, but they quickly dropped in price. That's not been the case with this Princess Peach game. If you got this game for like $25 or $30, it's absolutely fucking fantastic. Like, it's fun. It's easy. It's a really, good like time waster of a game.
Okay.
But like paying $60 for it.
Dollars.
Yeah, it's just like, again, like the having to replay the levels when like certain things are, it's hard to explain without getting in, but like there are certain levels that you can see what you want to get, but because the level itself is moving and pushing you onward, you can't go backwards and be like, oh, it was right there. And then like you can't start from a certain segment of the game.
Oh, so you like if you don't
complete that level, you have to start from the beginning.
Oh, that is super frustrating.
Which again, like I said, the levels are super short, but who wants to play like that's also an issue because you're only playing it in this short amount of time. So it's like if the level was more expansive and longer, then like it would almost be better because it would feel less like I'm in fucking the Groundhog Day version of a video game where it's just like I just keep replaying the same minute and a half trying to get this one thing, and when I miss it I just start over.
Like that is, that's one of my like biggest pet peeves about games is that like start like save points, and like that would instantly be a problem for me because I want to be able to save. Like, and if you can't save and you have to replay basically an entire level, even if it's 90 seconds long, I don't want to do it.
It's a very old school thing, you know. Yes. If you were playing Super Mario 3, if you die in the level, you got to start back at the beginning. Like that's the okay, but like those levels are, I know you can speed run through them, but you're able to maneuver in those levels, even though you're on a time. Like you do have a set time. This you don't have a timer, but you also can't go backwards past a certain point. So like each level say has like one. So what it is you're Princess Peach and you go to a theater and the theater gets overrun by some bad guys. And like each level is a play that you join and you become a character in that play. Like there's a Western play. There's a, there's some kind of ice capade thing. There's two, one where you're like a thief, one where you're like a ninja, and you get these costumes and it's fun. You learn new, like each level has their own like skill set of things to do. One, you're a mermaid, and it's underwater and it's all really, really cool and inventive, like with unique, like each level has its own unique game mechanic of like, things like it's not just punch and kick like the one you're like a Sherlock Holmes character, so you're not fighting anybody, you're uncovering clues, and like that's kind of fun and unique. Like in this level you're not gonna punch anybody, you're just gonna like follow this mystery. It's really, really inventive and offers a bunch of different types of gameplay within one game, but it has one extremely frustrating thing about it. So that kind of just holds it back. So
okay. Sounds like we're both frustrated with the games that we're playing. And with good reason. Like you said, like that saving factor, like that to me is like a make or break thing. Like I would be so mad because like you said, Nintendo games, like, so like part of the reason why I don't play my Switch as much is because most of the games I want to play are still $59.99.
Yeah.
And I refuse to pay $59.99. Because the last $59.99 game I played or I paid for on the Switch was extremely frustrating. extremely frustrating. And I don't know, man, like I love their games, but at the same time, like the cost, it's like, come on. Like, you never heard of like, you know, marking it down to $20. I mean, hell, like PS5, PlayStation marks down all of their signature games eventually to a $20 price point. So like, if you, you wait long enough, you will find them. They're called greatest hits. Like your greatest hits, you just put a label on it and you still keep the same $59.99 price. You know, I'm just like, ugh. Though I will say this much, the Zelda game, the one where you actually play Zelda, that looks pretty awesome. And it looks like they've gotten away from they went back to basics and went back to
I think I'm going to get that.
Yep. I'm going to get it too. Like, I feel like I'm going to get it. Because it looks fun, right? Like,
yeah, it's not as expansive. And I know a lot of people will, it kind of like, it's that Spider-Man argument we were talking earlier. It's like, I get why a lot of people would be like, I don't want it to be smaller, but like, you have these, like, what, three Zelda games? Because there was the one at the end of the Wii U, too, right? That was pretty big.
Yeah.
But definitely the last two that are giant open world games that you can do so fucking much in. And you still have so much to explore in those games. But they also want to keep capitalizing on their IP. Totally get that. Give me a smaller game. I don't want to play that big game, or, you know, have it, or to continue to play. Give me something small. And this feels like those old Game Boy games, like the Game Boy Color games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, give me back to something like, even the GameCube games were like, the Zelda GameCube games were, or even the Mario GameCube games were great. It was like they decided to, I don't want to say compete with PlayStation and Xbox, but there's definitely a component here of the world expansion is such to where it's as daunting as a PS game or an Xbox game, but the mechanics are not there to make it bearable. Because the one thing I can say about something like let's just say Ghost of Tsushima, right? I'll use that one as a reference because it's one of my favorite games. I can at any time, except for when I'm in the depths of a mission, can save. Like, if I'm in combat or I'm in a mission, I can't save. But if I step outside of the mission, I can save. So, like, I like that. And Nintendo has a tendency to not allow you to do that because of the way that their worlds work, that you can't just save. Like, the Zelda games are different. Like, you are absolutely able to save. They have different issues. You know, once I get a sword, let me keep the goddamn sword. Please. Yeah. Please, for the love of God. Don't make it a...
Why the fuck does it break after I kill 9 people with it?
Exactly. Like, I'm in the middle of fighting a boss and my sword dies on me? Are you fucking kidding me? This is not reality. I don't want that.
Yeah. But even in reality, like, I feel like that's... Like, okay, if you're going to do that, give me an option to well-maintain my equipment.
Yes.
And then have it not break. You know what I mean? Like, oh,
absolutely.
You're a dipshit. You didn't sharpen your sword, or you left it out, or whatever. And now it's rusted and it broke in battle. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. But give me some kind of option that lets me maintain my equipment so that, you know, after I use my bow to shoot 12 fucking arrows, it doesn't break.
Exactly. Or I learn magic and it allows me to auto-generate it so that at a certain point, I don't have this problem. Like, say, 12, or like 15 hours in, I get the unlock to actually keep a sword.
Yeah. Like, oh, here's this sword that's unbreakable. give me uh-huh. that, you know, like something, but like to have everything in the game break down eventually, it is kind of frustrating. Like,
exactly.
You know, especially if it's something rare that you got yep. and you're like, oh, you find out that fucking breaks through. Yeah, it might take 10 or 20 times as long, but I mean, you're not riding around Hyrule to not kill things.
Yeah. So Seriously. And like, and to put a finer point on it too, everything in those fucking games are impossible to, like, everything feels like a boss level, like boss, like these goons, even the goons are like at a point where like one hit won't kill them, even with the strongest of swords. Like it takes a full on battle and melee and like everything to kill something in that fucking game. And it just like both of those games, the Winds or whatever those two games are. They were more frustrating than the Star Wars game. And that says a lot. I think it's just because of the breakdown of parts, right? Like I'm like, I don't need it to be that. Like I ended up doing what you ended up doing, like, which was like I went on side quests for the longest time because it was a beautiful game to play. And as long as you stay away from things and you just kind of do your thing, I built my house. Like I ended up making like massive houses because you could buy a house and you could furnish it and all that shit. So I just went out and did little side quests, making a bunch of money and shit. And that's not what the game is about. Like that's the thing, is ultimately you have to beat the main journey or the main course, the main storyline. I don't know, man. Like it is very, very, very weird the way that some games like think that they're being inventive, but they're not. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes I just want hack and slash and I don't want to have to worry about it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like I keep on going back to Spider-Man, how they are like in every iteration of those, of the next gen Spider-Man since Spider-Man 2016, they have been the absolute perfect melding of hack and slash, problem solving and quests, adventure quests, like main adventure course quests. Like even after you finish the quest, you can still roll around that universe. And it's not huge. Like the Spider-Man, like even though New York is super impressive, like it's not a big, huge universe. Right. But I still maintain interest. I still have all three of those games on my PS5. And I regularly play them, you know, just depending on the mood that I'm in. Right. I play all three of them. And that just says something about them. Whereas, like any kind of Zelda game recently, it's just, I've been so fucking frustrated. With the exception of anytime they've I have one of their redos of Zelda. I think it's the redo of the third game, the one that was on SNES. I have that was ported over to the Wii in like updated graphics, but the graphics are like the one that's has Princess Zelda as the main character now. It's very, it's not that like refined look. It's almost comic-y. It's like a Saturday morning cartoon Disney. And it's fun. It's fun because it's beatable and I don't have to like load up on a bunch of weapons all to have them crash. Like all of them still work. Like I can hack and slash my way through enemies. I guess I'm just becoming an old man. I don't want the new. I don't want the new. I want new graphics, but I don't want like inventive gameplay equals frustration for me at this point. Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't know. Mostly it's because I'm just like, I don't have the time, man. Like,
yeah.
And it'll suck me in, and then everything else will just fall by the wayside, and then I'll feel shitty about myself because I spent 165 hours playing this game, and I'm like, that's a lot of life that I just was like, Well, okay, I guess I'm just gonna say, and I mean, I know I do that with TV, but like I try to like have a little bit of time for all the things I love, not just, massive amounts of time for this one thing that sucked me in. A lot of times winds up being just unfulfilling. I loved playing Zelda, that first Switch one, when I was playing it, and I had a good time exploring the world, and but like ultimately, like the end of the game was unfulfilling for me. Like, and so like I haven't gone back to it because it was like, I mean, I beat the final boss by I actually triggered the final boss by fucking accident. I was just exploring. Wound up beating it, and then I was just like, oh, well, I'll go back and explore some more at some point, but I haven't. So, and that kind of just sucks because I really did like the game. It just ultimately left like this hollow feeling. It's like eating a bunch of fucking candy, So.
No, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. It's like it. There's no fulfilling. There's nothing fulfilling. Just a stomach ache. Like that's all it is. But for me, it's more of a like a headache, right? Like.
Well, hopefully, your Star Wars adventure will get more fulfilling as it goes. If not,
Absolutely.
then I don't know.
I
You
mean,
can't,
there's.
you're kind of pot committed at this point.
Yeah, I am. But I mean, at the same time, I can also I'm not opposed to like going, oh, well, I'll chalk that up to losing $120 if I get too frustrated.
I kind of just to like prove kind of what we're talking about, like I think I mentioned before I've started doing like jigsaw puzzles a little bit in my spare time,
Yes.
like while I watch TV or whatever, kind of just because I swear to God, I've developed like ADD or something as I get older, because I'm like I always have to be doing nine things. I can't just do one thing. Anyway, so I two puzzles I started like in the last month, and I got about 25% into completing them, and like both of them, oddly enough, were like Thomas Kincaid, like paintings turned into puzzles, and were so fucking frustrating. Like the pieces wouldn't stay locked, even though they were in the right place, they wouldn't stay locked in. Like it just a lot of like issues with the actual pieces of the puzzle and the way it was done, and the just the shitty craftsmanship of it being a puzzle, were so fucking frustrating that, and I was kind of working on both of, like I gave up one to work on the other because I thought it'd be easier, and then both of them just wound up being equally frustrating. Literally last night, I was like, why am I doing this? These cost like $10. And it's
Oh.
frustrating the shit out of me. It's like,
Yeah.
no, fuck this. I just put everything I put together, I just, crumbled the pieces back to, whatever, dumped them in the box, and was like, these are going somewhere else. Like, I'll take them to McKay's because McKay's takes puzzles, and I'll just trade them in. If they give me $2 or a dollar, or what the fuck ever they give me, doesn't matter. I like the frustration. Why am I letting something that I paid $10 for frustrate me to the point where I'm just like, I don't know why the fuck I'm doing this. I'm not
Yeah, you're
enjoying
questioning everything.
it.
No, I totally get that. We haven't talked about many games on the PS5 that I've given up, but I've given up at least three of them. Like where I just stopped and I'm like, my life is better than this. My life is worth more than this. And one of them happened to be Red Dead Redemption 2. I mean, I tried that game three fucking times. And I gave that game 25 hours each time. So I'm 75 hours in, and I'm nowhere farther. Like, it's the problem I have around with all of the like all of the Rockstar games, because like they're just they're too side quest intensive to be fun. Like, and every single mission seems to have like 45 components to it, all of which it's all dealing with shit doesn't go right, right? Like your guys start shooting up something, or like, you know, the police are on your ass, or whatever it may be. Like, there's always a very big frustrating part to it where it's like, I don't care about low key games. Like, I want some activity. I want some like issues to come up, but like, there's a point where like, anytime you do one of those games, like any Rockstar game, you know, whatever mission you go on, it's always going to go to hell. So like, whatever they say is the goal of it, it's going to be the exact opposite of that. Like, everything that you have to deal with is going to go wrong. And it's like, those are not the games I want. Like, I don't want to have to spend 3 hours on a single fucking mission. Like, and that's sometimes, like, in Red Dead, like, 3 hours. And you're like, why am I doing this? Like, how much, is this really fun? No, it's not really fun for me. Like, it is a very wild thing to, like, come to grips with, right? Like, it's almost like getting a Lego set and it turning out to be like the worst, most challenging thing that you've ever put together.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes the joy.
Yeah. But like, and when you spend them, but the thing about it is, like we're saying with Red Dead, well, Red Dead, you can get fairly cheap now, but like the Star Wars game, like when you spend like that level of money, you're like, I'm kind of committing myself to do this. Past the point of like, I'm frustrated and I want to break this thing in half. Like Lego mm-hmm. sets, big Lego sets are expensive. So like when you're frustrated, you're like, fuck, I spent a lot of money on this. Like I have to keep going. And versus like me with the puzzles and being like, why the fuck am I letting something I spent $10 on frustrate me to the point that I'm angry? Like, fuck this. Yeah. It's a puzzle. So
It is like a weird thing, right? Like where, and this is something I don't talk about, which is like, even though we've announced it and we've talked about it, video games are very that like is beyond what, right? Or something that you didn't like and that you weren't expecting, like. It's like down that is as really frustrating as anything that you watch, but it's even worse you're in control of it. And it becomes this whole thing, when is enough enough? Right? Like when is it going, like when do I stop doing it? Like you said, like how much time do I invest in a $10 puzzle? You know? Like when become not joy, frustration, and anger, which is a whole different other thing. Like, to be honest, we've hate watched a bunch of shows. Like, I know I have. You know, and you know, it becomes a point where it's like if it's a 30-minute show, I'll keep on watching it. Maybe it'll get better, right? Well, like those hour-long shows, maybe I'll give it a season, or maybe I'll go back to it. But like video games and puzzles and like anything that is not inactive and it's active, it becomes this very strange thing where it adds an extra layer to things. You know where it never happens to me, or it's only happened to me once or twice in my life, is reading. Books are literally like, I'll always finish a book no matter what. Like I think, like I said, like my failure rate is literally 2 or 3. They may take me forever, but I finish it, right? Like, I don't have that kind of same level of frustration that I do with anything else, any other kind of media.
Yeah. Hush. Ripley's like, aren't you done? So yeah, hopefully people out there are having, I guess, I don't want to, yeah, I guess, yeah, a better time than we are playing video games. So next week, you're going to the Thursday fan event for Transformers.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, I am.
That's, yep. That's awesome. I unfortunately won't be able to see it till Friday.
Okay.
But my plan is to see it as early as possible on Friday. I'm weirdly excited for this movie. So we're definitely going to be talking Transformers next week. Maybe we can get in. I will have finished Chaos by then. I have one episode left. And I'm caught up on Bad Monkey. I know we haven't talked about it in a few weeks, but holy shit, what an incredible show. I still, yes. Every time I finish an episode, I'm like, Adam has seen the whole thing. Like, I'm super jealous.
Oh, it's so good. It gets like the whole thing of like, man, it keeps on getting better. Like, that doesn't quit till the end. And even the end is not, it's not a, it's great.
Yeah.
Are you here?
Yeah, I got you. I thought I lost you for a second. We'll probably like once that's finished, we'll have a longer discussion about
it. Yeah, I feel like it's warranted it in that regard.
Yeah. Go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, which isn't much right now because Adam and I are the only ones that I podcast. Adam is the only one I podcast with that doesn't have kids, and everybody else's kids have, you know, rightfully so, taken over their life. So, and then go check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com. We've got a ton of stuff going on right now. We are Logan's final leg. The final leg of the tour will be happening. Just waiting for a few things, and we'll get started on that. And then my stuff, like, you know, I've got a bunch of reviews this week, a bunch of 4K stuff, and next week I'll have a bunch more going on. I've literally got stacks of stuff that I've got to review. MovieOwl.com, and then we'll be back next week, hopefully talking Transformers. That's something else very cool.
All right, we will see you guys then. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerd.